It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, do you like discovering unexpected places when you travel, near or far? We'll look at some hidden gems in Wisconsin and around the world, and you can share your favorites. First, if you experience anxiety, you are far from alone. In fact, our next guest says anxiety is a common human experience, even though we don't always recognize it for what it is. And while it may affect people differently, there is some good news. We can learn to re-channel anxiety and use it as a force for good in our lives. In her new book, our guest shares a lot of strategies to help us understand our anxiety, find out what triggers it, and to help retrain our brains to live better with it. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What causes you to feel anxiety? Do you have things you do to help you deal with it? Has it taken time to figure that out? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Wendy Suzuki is a professor of neuroscience and psychology in the Center for Neuroscience at New York University. She's an authority on neuroplasticity and mental health. Her new book is called Good Anxiety, Harnessing the Power of the Most Misunderstood Emotion. Wendy, thanks a lot for joining us today.
It's a pleasure to be here.
I wanted to ask you first about the scope of anxiety in the United States when we include people with, you know, clinically diagnosable anxiety and people who have maybe not that level, but where anxiety is affecting their lives. How common is this?
Very, very common. Even before the pandemic started, 90% of Americans raised their hands and said that they experience anxiety very, very commonly. And that has only gone up. So basically, all of us have anxiety. But as you point out, there's a wide spectrum of anxiety, from clinical anxiety, which is a different beast that needs medical attention, just like a broken leg would. My book focuses on the lower levels of severity of anxiety, what I call everyday anxiety, but that covers a huge swath of the American population these days.
It's kind of a twist here. I think a lot of people will have to, and I had to, stop and think about this, the idea that anxiety isn't in and of itself a bad thing, that there are things we can do, and we'll talk about what those things are, to use anxiety for a force for good in our lives. Can you make the case that it's worth taking the time to recalculate our thoughts about anxiety?
Absolutely. The reason why everybody needs to recalculate their views on anxiety is because high levels of chronic anxiety lead to high levels of chronic stress hormone cortisol in your system. We know that it's very bad for your physiological system. It can affect your heart, your digestive system, even your long-term reproductive systems are affected. And also, my specialty, the brain. Long-term high levels of stress hormones, cortisol, can first damage the input structures to brain cells called neurons. And then eventually, with really high levels that continue for a long time, can actually kill brain cells in two key brain areas, the hippocampus, critical for memory, and the prefrontal cortex, critical for decision making. Those are areas that you want to preserve for as long as you can. So this is why everybody should learn how to harness their anxiety to do good things in their lives.
I want to dig into one key concept that's going to let us help do that. Brain plasticity or neuroplasticity. What do we mean by that?
Brain plasticity is the brain's amazing ability to respond to the external environment. It can respond in a positive way by learning new things, taking advantage of creativity to solve problems and to respond in a positive way to things like physical activity, meditation, good sleep that you provide the brain. Brain plasticity can also go in the negative direction. And the best example there is high levels of chronic stress can damage the brain for the long term. So we have the capacity to change our brains and make it stronger and better. And one of the things that we can do is decrease stress turning down the volume on our anxiety. And that can lead to a more creative and productive life.
We're talking to Wendy Suzuki about her new book. It's called Good Anxiety, Harnessing the Power of the Most Misunderstood Emotion. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question about anxiety, what it is, how we know what it is, what it does to our brains. Have you come up with strategies in your life that let you deal with long-term or short-term anxiety yourself? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Wendy, your book is full of concrete suggestions for figuring out our anxiety, what it is, what it does to us, and then how to deal with it. Let's start with the first step, recognizing anxiety. I've dealt with anxiety for years. Only in the last couple of years did I know what to call it. How do we start to see how it is affecting our lives?
Yeah, that's a great point. So my simple definition of anxiety is that feeling of fear or worry that often accompanies uncertain situations. So that is kind of a clear definition of our life today with the coronavirus pandemic. It introduces so much uncertainty, and that has really increased our level of anxiety. But do you have that fear or your worry, whether you acknowledge it or you do, like I've learned that I do all the time, which is kind of mask it and just ignore it. Mm-hmm. That is anxiety, and you want to put it in check, make sure you understand it and are kind of using it to your best advantage, because it is a human emotion. It was evolved to protect us, even though it's not protecting us right now because its volume is too high. And that's why we really want to start to pay attention to it in a new way.
I want to talk about that idea of anxiety as something that evolved as a positive tool. Did I just see a tiger in the bushes over there or a snake or whatever? Anxiety can be a pretty good thing that gives me the energy and impetus I need to do something about it, right?
Absolutely. Even more than a good, pretty good thing, it is essential for our survival. We evolved the emotion of anxiety to kind of put us on edge and get us into action if we needed action. If we relied on our own decision-making skills, you know, sometimes maybe you do want to run away from the lion, sometimes you don't feel like it, and bam, you know, you're gone. So that, you know, you can imagine if you were somebody living 2.5 million years ago, it is essential. But jump to our present day, and we have things that provoke our anxiety that don't come along every once in a while. It's several times an hour. With the weather report can produce anxiety. The news feed, the social media feed, all are inducing anxiety. And these are all the things that are turning the volume up on our anxiety. And you know, too much of anything, even a good thing, is bad. And that is why our current kind of societal level of high levels of anxiety has lost its protective element. And so the first step in my book is learning how to turn it down.
Let's talk about figuring out maybe the unhealthy responses to anxiety we have. You've got some quizzes in your book. And I love that you do this in a very non-judgmental way, by the way, of saying, what negative behaviors does my anxiety drive me to that feel good in the short run, maybe, but over time they're bad?
Yes.
How do we start to spot those?
Well, you know, just start to list them. Also, I try to be not non-judgmental. You try and be non-judgmental on yourself. So I'll just use some of my own examples of anxiety coping strategies. They always involved sugar. So brownies, ice cream, a nice cold beer at the end of the day. Every once in a while, those things are great. But if I turn to those things every single time I feel anxious, that could lead quickly to rapid weight gain and not feeling so good overall. So what are some of those things in your life? Just to start, awareness is so key in this book. Awareness of your own anxiety, awareness that anxiety at its core is good. That is a really important, but it takes some time to wrap your head around that. But all of these awarenesses will lead to towards what I call good anxiety.
We're talking to Wendy Suzuki, professor of neuroscience and psychology in the Center for Neuroscience at New York University. We're talking about her new book. It's called Good Anxiety, Harnessing the Power of the Most Misunderstood Emotion. You can join in with your thoughts, your questions, maybe your experiences at 800-642-1234. Have you been more anxious over this last year and a half? A lot of reasons for that, I think. How have you tried to deal with that? Have you found, stumbled across, or read about a good strategy that helps you deal with anxiety in a healthy way? Do you have a question about the brain science behind anxiety? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation, get more strategies on dealing with our anxiety coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation about anxiety and how we can actually use it for good and grow from it. Our guest is Wendy Suzuki, a neuroscientist from New York University. We're talking about her new book. It's called Good Anxiety, Harnessing the Power of the Most Misunderstood Emotion. You could join in if you'd like at 800-642-1234. Was there a time in your life where you felt like anxiety was getting the better of you day to day? How did you come out of it? If you came out of it, do you have advice maybe to share with others or a question about how anxiety works? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Wendy, we just talked about, you know, spotting the things that our anxiety triggers us to do. Let's take the next step now. When we're in that rut, when we've carved out that neural pathway that says anxiety equals the sugary treat or the drink or the road rage or whatever it might be, how do we start crafting that new path in a better direction?
Yeah, that's a great question. And the first step that I would take is to focus on the anxiety itself rather than the response to the anxiety. So I spent a lot of time coming up with a wide range of really doable tools to decrease the volume on our anxiety. And the very first tool that I give to everybody everywhere is breath, deep breath work. And did you know that breathing deeply is literally activating a part of your nervous system that is designed to de-stress you? Everybody's heard of the fight or flight response that comes with anxiety, that feeling of nervousness that is getting you ready to either fight the lion or run away. Did you know that there is an equal and opposite part of the nervous system that was designed to bring you back to normal states after stress? And this is what you are activating when you breathe deeply. This system does slow down your breathing. So this is something you can do consciously. It has an immediate effect on your feeling of anxiety. You can do it with your kids. You can do it in the middle of a conversation that is causing you anxiety. So it's a very powerful tool.
Another common theme in your book, Wendy, is kind of our self-talk, I guess, how we think in our brains about the problem that's causing or problems that are causing us stress and anxiety. How do we reframe those from negative, bad, self-judgmental ways of talking to more positive ways that are going to help help decrease that anxiety?
Yeah. I think I talk about something that's called the negativity bias in my book. So the negativity bias is something all humans have. When given an array of good and bad things, particularly about yourself, what do? You focus on that one comment that one person said that, you know, said that your talk was terrible when everybody else said it was great. And you focus on that. And it comes out in other ways. In meetings, one has to be very careful about the negative comments that one makes about a candidate or something being evaluated, because that has a lot more weight than a positive thing that you might say. We are just biased towards that. It is partially a protective mechanism, but it's partially recognizing that in ourselves. I actually was just called out for doing that to myself the other day by friends. And I thought, oh my God, I'm doing it to myself. One of the things that I found really helpful is I've had the opportunity to work with coaches career coaches, and they are so great at stepping back and really seeing both the best aspects of you and also the parts that need work, but couching it in a positive light. Can you learn to be your best coach? And even if you haven't had a coach, everybody has a friend that has that positive outlook. And so you can use that friend as a model to turn in on yourself and ask yourself, am I being that negative bias self, or am I being the good coach self? And that is a wonderful thing to practice.
Talking to Wendy Suzuki about her new book, Good Anxiety, Harnessing the Power of the Most Misunderstood Emotion. You could join in with your questions, maybe your experiences at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Wendy, it's interesting to me that people aren't calling in, and I think that may mean something. Are we too reluctant in some cases? I understand people might not want to do it on a radio show, but are we too reluctant to talk about something that's going on in our minds like anxiety? Is that part of our problem?
Absolutely. In fact, with all the people I've talked to since the publication of this book, I've noticed that there's a lot of shame around the emotion of anxiety. And part of the book, and part of the reason I wrote the book, was an invitation to start the conversation. Why? Because 90% of Americans identified as anxious even before the pandemic. So basically, every single person in the room right now is feeling this feeling of anxiety. There's nothing to be shameful about. Everybody has this emotion. It is part of the human emotional spectrum. And so while I totally understand that it takes a little while to wrap your head around that, there still is a lot of shame around anxiety. And so, you know, I shared all of my anxieties. You'll read all about them in my book. They're very common ones. And I was an anxiety denier, I learned while writing this book. I like to kind of hide the anxiety from the outside world. But I got over that because now I've written about it and everybody can learn about all of my anxieties in this book.
Now, I think sometimes people might think of anxiety as being irrational, maybe. But I can think of a lot of rational reasons for people to be anxious about stuff. Am I going to get the job? Am I going to find a life partner? Hey, there's this pandemic. I'm worried about that. How do we deal with very reasonable anxieties in our lives so that they don't overwhelm us from minute to minute?
Well, I think that's a great question. And I would say that one of the tools that I think is so powerful in this book is the tool of mindset. How are you thinking about this? So instead of worrying about a job, your promotion, that is critical. And beating yourself up and saying, what's the matter with me? I can't get over this. Think about that emotion, that worry and that fear that might come with worrying about your job as a little sign or a big sign saying, this is something important. Pay attention to me. And that starts to make sense. That is useful. That is protective. Now, again, you can't do much if you're in depths of anxiety. So that is why I gave so many tools to turn that volume down. But it's never going to go away. And that is the signal that I hear is a signal telling me, this is something that is important, or this is something that has worried me or scared me since I was a young child. And so I talk about my social anxiety that I had. I've gotten over it because I'm a professor, so I can speak, no problem. But I still have anxiety in social situations. And that came from years of, of suffering from social anxiety as a shy, awkward kid.
Let's go to our callers now. George is with us in Ashland. George, hi.
Good afternoon. I was listening to your conversation as I'm mowing the lawn here in Ashland. And it struck me that if a person identifies or identity is tied up with the thoughts going around in their heads, they're going to suffer more anxiety than if they just realize that their brain is going to spit out a lot of stuff that is not them, that they don't have to identify with. It may make a difference for them.
That's interesting, George. So we don't have to identify ourselves. We are not our anxiety, he's saying, I think, Wendy.
I love that. I think that's a great way to think about it. A wonderful mindset shift that those thoughts of worry are not me. That is something that I do because I'm a human and I'm a human that has the emotion of anxiety. Great mindset tool.
George, thanks for that call. Nicole joins us now in Eau Claire. Nicole, hi.
Hi. This is a question for you about middle school, upper elementary students and some techniques for getting them to flip their self-talk or their mindset when they're sort of maybe above the idea of I'm going to breathe because people have been just telling me to breathe since I've been five, you know, or, you know, looking in the mirror and giving yourself that sort of like pep talk with, you know, without actually making them think you just want to see them smile and say nice things.
Interesting. Nicole, great question and a great time to develop good self-talk habits, I imagine, Wendy.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, there are so many different ways to do it. There are looking in the mirror, as you say. There are mantras that you can do. One of my favorite forms of exercise that I actually teach is a form of exercise called Intensati, that every single movement that you do is associated with a positive spoken affirmation. So there's jumping jacks and you say, I believe I will succeed during the jumping jacks or front punches that are associated with the saying, I am strong now. So there's a lot of fun ways to get your kids to kind of enact these take in these positive comments about themselves. And I bring this up because I've done this with kids. I've done this with adults. I've taught it for 7 years for free at NYU. And there's nothing like, you know, shouting out these positive things with a whole bunch of other sweaty affirmation shouting people. You feel a little silly at first, but you feel really good. And I've had parents and their kids send me videos of them doing the same affirmations that I've put on Vimeo. And they say that they do it every morning together. So that might be an idea for you.
Thanks for the call, Nicole. I want to take our last half a minute or so, Wendy. One of my favorite bits of advice from your book is being creative as a tool to decrease anxiety. Leave us with a plug for that, please.
Yeah. So creativity is really part of the tools that you'll use to shift your mindset. There are literally hundreds of ways to approach the same situation. But sometimes that anxiety-provoking situation that's always provoked anxiety, you feel like there's only one way, there's only one outcome. So the book encourages you to use your creative mind to come up with five different ways to change that, to approach it in a different way, to end it in a different way, to make the middle different. And in doing that, you start to see the power of mindset shift and you start to kind of practice that positive brain plasticity, that learning of your creative muscle, brain muscle, that will help you address your anxiety situations in a new way, and you're bound to find a way that will lower your anxiety levels.
Wendy, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
That's Wendy Suzuki from New York University. We've been talking about her new book. It's called Good Anxiety, Harnessing the Power of the Most Misunderstood Emotion. Coming up after the news, science and travel writer Gemma Tarlak is back with us to share the joy of finding things off the beaten path, plus some spooky sights around the world for the Halloween season. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up tomorrow at 7 on The Morning Show, rural Wisconsin faces challenges with healthcare access. Check out the latest efforts to make sure farm workers and rural residents can get the care they need. That's tomorrow morning at 7 here on the Ideas Network. Now, when you travel near and far, if you're like me, you want to see the big famous stuff, the things the tourists line up for, because you gotta see it while you're there. But also, if you're like me, your favorite memories of travel may be the little things off the beaten path that surprise you, that give you an unexpected sense of wonder in the world. Our next guest says we can find those surprises and capture that sense of wonder whether we're traveling around the world or exploring our own neighborhoods. And she's got a few spooky places to share leading up to Halloween. We want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do you have a favorite travel discovery in Wisconsin or elsewhere in the world? Tell us about the cool event you stumbled across, the little restaurant you found, that beautiful natural area. Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Gemma Tarlak is back with us, a longtime science writer. Gemma is senior editor and writer at Atlas Obscura. Gemma, it's been a long time. Welcome back.
Hello, it's a delight to be with you again. Thank you.
I know from talking to you over the years, you love discovering new things, whether that's in the world of science or places around the world. What is it that brings you that joy of finding that cool and maybe unexpected thing?
Well, I think, you know, it's just I'm a curious person. And so if I see something, I appreciate its beauty or that it's interesting, but then I want to know, well, what is it? How did that come to be? What does it mean? And I just start, you know, looking for those answers. And we live in a world that is full of unexplored surprises and delights. And there's always something there to get excited about and to kind of feed your sense of wonder.
And that sense of wonder I wanted to get into. That's part of the mission I know of Atlas Obscura is finding the things that aren't the same wherever you go. What is it about that feeling, that sense of wonder that can be so fun?
Well, I think, you know, as humans, exploration is in our DNA. When you look at, if I could put on my science writer hat for a moment, when you look at our evolution, arguably more than any other species out there, we explore, we break into new places, we check it out, and if we like it, we stay there and we adapt. So we're constantly spreading around first the globe and now into outer space. We're just explorers at heart. And so I think finding that new thing, that wrinkle that you weren't expecting, I think that just really feeds something deep within our souls. And that's why it's so satisfying, because it's something that's really hardwired into us.
Now, you've traveled literally all over the world, even Antarctica. And we'll get into that in a bit. But you've made the case, we were talking earlier today, you don't have to get on a plane to find this stuff. How can we have this mindset, you know, even maybe exploring our own hometown?
Sure. And I think it's all about, you know, the first step is really noticing and observing. And if you want to go really micro, I have a pet spider. Alice, she is my roommate. She decided to move into my house and she's in my kitchen. And it has been fascinating watching her over the months, watching her hunt, watching her build her beautiful little funnel web in the corner of my kitchen that never gets sunlight. And so every day I check on her. And I think, you know, some people might say, and just, you know, get out a heavy book or whatever. But the first time I saw her, I thought, well, what's that? Oh, it's a spider. Well, what kind of spider is it? You know, what can I find out about this spider? And then, of course, I named her. And now she is a little part of my day, every day. And I think that sense of wonder and curiosity, you know, you can go really big and end up in Antarctica, or you could go really small and find a whole little ecosystem in your kitchen.
Now, that's great. And with the pandemic, I got to say, and I think I'm like a lot of people, I started looking for, you know, little gems in the area that I might never have discovered and found, you know, like a 5-minute drive from my house, a park I'd never heard of or somewhere between park and natural area. And, you know, if you hit it at the right time, you could see like zillions of turtles like hanging out on the rocks and logs of the ponds. It's just this amazing thing. I had no idea. And I lived so close to it. Did you have some of that pandemic discovery in your own neck of the woods?
Well, I have a couple dogs and I'm always looking for new places to let them check out, let them smell. So yeah, I do that all the time, pandemic or no. And, you know, it's that same thing that I found like a big clearing that I thought would be a cool place to walk them. And then I realized that there were old building foundations there. And so of course, you know, I had to figure out what that was about. And it ended up that I was in a corner of county grounds where there had been, here in Milwaukee, where there had been an orphanage at one point. And so, you know, it's always when you see something, just take a moment to really notice it. And that's how you find wonder around the corner, really, like you were saying.
Talking to Gemma Tarlak from Atlas Obscura, looking at the joy of finding something unexpected in our world when we're traveling. I'll throw that in quotes. That might mean getting on a plane and flying to another continent. It might be going for a walk in your own neighborhood or even watching that spider in your house. Have you had one of those or a lot of those? Do you have some favorite memories to share? Call 800-642-1234 or a hidden surprise in your own neighborhood. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. You can email ideas@WPR.org or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. A little detour, Gemma. I promised some scary sites around the world. You've got a feature, I think it's called Fright Club at Atlas Obscura. What are you looking for there?
Yeah, so we have every October we do Halloween big. And this year we're doing Fright Club. We have all these great stories from around the world. One of our writers dipped into this super creepy retro photographic archive of Halloween in Los Angeles. We have a story about a woman who accumulated a mountain of mannequins and like mannequin parts.
That's the stuff of nightmares, yeah.
Oh, stuff of nightmares. We have a story about a science experiment where the scientists released butterflies onto this remote island off the coast of Finland. They did not know it at the time, but the butterflies were full of wasps that were full of micro wasps. It was like a double parasitic kind of Russian nesting doll situation. And the scientists realized this when, to quote the writer, the butterflies burst. So sorry to get a little bit gross there, but there's all kinds of stuff on our website right now that is all about celebrating the different aspects of Halloween. And it's just a really fun way to go all around the world.
And you wrote one, Gemma. I think this place is on your want to see list, the Demon Wall of Norway. This is weird.
This is such a strange story. And, you know, when I was interviewing the researchers who uncovered it, they kept interrupting themselves and saying, this is so strange. But basically, very respected curator in mid-20th century Norway, he was restoring a mural in a little village church in southern Norway. The mural he was restoring was from the 17th century. And when he finished after 2 years and unveiled it, it was like nothing anyone had seen. You really have to see the photos to understand how strange the story is. But it was just a wall of these tiny, tiny demons. We're talking like matchstick size, absolutely tiny demons upon demons upon demons. Nothing like it in the world from the 17th century. Nothing like it from Norway at any point in history. And these researchers studying it this summer concluded that he made it up. He did not restore anything. He actually destroyed the original 17th century mural and instead painted over these demons upon demons upon demons. No one knows why he does it, why he did it. He had a very long and successful and respected career. It's just this one tiny village church wall where, you know, we don't know what possessed him.
There's a mid-period John Carpenter movie in there, I feel like. I don't know.
And you really have to see the images to appreciate just the absolute fascinating and strange aspect of this art.
We invited our callers to share their off-the-beaten-path discoveries and their travels near and far at 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Alvin is with us in Milwaukee. Alvin, hi.
Hello. How are you?
Good. What do you want to share with us, Alvin?
So for a long time, I lived in Milwaukee's River West neighborhood, and I used to walk down by the river. There's a trail on both sides of the Milwaukee River that goes quite extensively from Humboldt up to Capitol Drive. And I found these old stone structures right near the river, I'm trying to think which street it is, what the cross street is. But I found these old stone structures, and I was like, what is this? It's kind of fascinating. They look really old. And it turns out it's the very small remains of the old swimming station. There was a big swimming pool at Gordon, not pool, people swam in the river at Gordon Park.
Brilliant. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, so finding that, I was like, well, what is this? And then I was able to discover some parts of the city history that, you know, that was a big swimming thing there at Gordon Park. And now it's just kind of tucked away in a lot of trees, and there's just a small remain of it. It's really fascinating.
Wow, cool.
A cool local thing. Another thing I really scary stuff from way back when I was in college, exploring the remains of the St. Nikolai Kirche in Hamburg, Germany, which you weren't really supposed to go into, but I managed to make it into the ruins. So there you go.
Alvin, thanks a lot. I won't endorse the trespassing part, but Gemma, in that first story, he followed his curiosity and found something cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what it's all about. You know, the first step, like I said, it's noticing, right? So Alvin, you thought, hey, what is this? And then you weren't just content to say, oh, well, that's that. I'm going to keep walking. You start digging and thinking and researching. And that is such a satisfying process in and of itself. And then, you know, first it's like your secret that you find, and then it becomes your knowledge. And then it becomes this thing that you want to tell other people about. And that's really what Atlas Obscura is all about.
Thanks for sharing that with us, Alvin. We're talking to Gemma Tarlak, senior editor and writer at Atlas Obscura, looking at wonderful places and the joy of discovering them when we travel near and far. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What's been your favorite travel discovery? That thing you stumbled across, the unexpected place of wonder on the other side of your neighborhood or the other side of the world? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Gemma Tarlak from Atlas Obscura. She's sharing the joys of discovering cool new things, places, and events that fill us with wonder when we travel in our own neighborhoods or around the world. You can share yours. What's a discovery that stood out to you at 800-642-1234? That's 800-642-1234. Maybe off the beaten path. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go back to your calls now. Roger is with us in Grantsburg. Roger, hi.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Good. What's your story, Roger?
Well, I went back when I in high school in 1980. I graduated. I live up in Grantsburg, Wisconsin. There was a Burnett County. There was a huge fire that went through and burned off like 20 some thousand acres up along the St. Croix River in the Kohler Peat Swamp, and it runs all the way along the St. Croix. Now it's Governor Nolan's Forest, but there was, well, we was down there, and they put water cans on her back and let us go. I'm down walking through this swamp that's like, once you're in there, you're lost, and it's just lost. And walking along, and all of a sudden, I tripped over cement foundations of a building that had been built in there, of a house, and then finding out later on that people actually lived down in the swamp. And, you know, in the early 1900s, it's like, it was just creepy going through there and finding this. And then remains of stuff, I found a cowbell stuck on my foot. And what would that be? What would they be doing there? You know, just creeped me out. Every time I think about it, I still got the bell even.
No kidding.
It's like,
is it in reach?
It was a tin cowbell, like the clanker in it that they tied on their neck.
Wow.
And I found it was stuck to the end of my foot, and I tripped. And what the heck? There it is. It's a big cowbell. Well, I kept it. It's my archaeological find.
I love it, Roger. That is great. I'm glad you still have the cowbell. We need more cowbell in our lives, I guess. Gemma, the enthusiasm. Roger had that experience, and he still has the cowbell, and he still just, has that memory of what could have been a good ghost story there.
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, that all gets back to just what exploration feeds in our souls. And, you know, I love that story. Thank you so much for sharing it, Roger. And, you know, it makes me think, like, even times when I can't get out and explore, I will admit that I'm one of those people that loves to hang out on like Google Earth and zoom in and see things. Like recently I was looking at a map of Wisconsin and I noticed the impression of Paleo Lake, Wisconsin, which was this enormous glacial lake that eventually, you know, it overflowed its dam and boom, you know, huge flood. But you can still, if you look at just a map of Wisconsin, you can still see the outline of this enormous lake. And I love finding that. And of course, I'm not the first person to find it. Geologists have written plenty about it. But, you know, with my own eyes, just looking at a map of Wisconsin and exploring it from the comfort of my couch on my computer, and then just finding something that I've never seen before. And it's just so satisfying. That I love hearing from folks like Roger and Alvin that, you know, we all have this deep within us, this desire to ask questions and learn and explore.
Thanks a lot for sharing that with us, Roger, at 800-642-1234. We'll go now to Mike in Oconomowoc. Mike, hi.
Hi. My first trip to Door County was sort of exciting. We were water skiing in one of the bays, and it was just a beautiful sunny day, warm, and the water was just supremely clear. And all of a sudden, it got the water just got pitch black underneath my skis, and it sort of like set my heart racing. I'm a certified scuba diver, so, you know, I naturally wanted to go see what in the world this was, and it was just an old wooden wreck that was about a couple hundred feet long in the bay, and it just sort of took us by surprise. So we went to a small little hotel that was just down the bay and talked to the owners there, and they told us, oh, yeah, it's been there since, you know, anybody could remember, maybe the early 1900s, and you know, every now and then when the bay freezes, sometimes it actually will stick up out of the ice.
Wow.
Because of how shallow it gets. But it was just so startling when you see this beautiful blue water and all of a sudden it gets real dark and you're thinking, I don't think there's any sharks in this lake. It sure looked big.
Mike, thanks for sharing that. I love the story, first of all, Gemma, and like talking to the locals about it. It's a good entry point to meet the local people and let them share some of their lore.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, sometimes too, when I've been out walking my dogs all over, I'll find something and I'll start looking at it. And someone else will walk by with their dogs and be like, what are you looking at? I'm like, look at this brick. Look at this brick just laying here. And then they start looking at the brick. And, you know, so it's, you know, it's a great social activity as well.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to Gemma Tarlak from Atlas Obscura about those fun discoveries when we're traveling near or far. Back to your calls now. Sandy is on the line in Monroe. Sandy, hello.
Hi.
What do you...
I recently moved into an apartment, and the balcony overlooks a cemetery, and I've always been deathly afraid of cemeteries, no pun intended. One day I saw a family out there, and they were playing I See, and these kids were running around going, I see a red flower, I see an S, I see a 1. And it completely changed my idea of cemeteries and how beautiful they are. It was just so fun that they were just exploring this whole area.
Well, I got to ask briefly, Sandy, have you gone down and explored that neighboring cemetery yourself?
I have. It's beautiful.
I love it, Sandy.
It completely changed my mind.
Thank you for sharing that. What a great lesson there, Gemma. Kind of like that the child's game of I see could be pretty useful for us grownups, can't it?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I will admit that whenever I travel somewhere I've never been before, my two favorite places to explore are the grocery store and the local cemetery. And that's because you can learn so much about a culture, about a place, just by looking at the headstones and, you know, understanding more about the people who live there. And it's just, again, that sense of exploration and learning things you didn't know you were going to learn that day when you woke up. I love that.
That is great. Thank you so much for sharing that with us, Sandy. It's fall. Gemma, what do you have an exploration plan coming up yourself in just our last half a minute or so?
Oh, my gosh. There's so much of our great state that I have not yet seen. So I am really hoping to get way, way up north, like Eagle River or so, and just see what I see. I have no idea what I'm going to explore, but I'm really looking forward to seeing it.
Gemma, I love it. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure.
That's Gemma Tarlak, senior editor and writer at Atlas Obscura. She joined us today for a look at the joy of discovering things that are off the beaten path when we travel. And traveling can mean far away or, as we heard from so many people, close to home in here in Wisconsin. Hope you keep sharing yours, by the way. We've got a post up at the Ideas Network Facebook page asking you to share your off the beaten path travel discoveries, the place, the shipwreck, the lost building, the restaurant, the event, you name it. Tell us about it over on the Ideas Network Facebook page or tweet us at Central Time WPR. Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, Governor Evers issued an apology this week for Wisconsin's history of forced boarding schools for Native Americans. Dig into the history of those schools and why they're seen as a low point in American and Canadian history. Also, sometimes people go viral online because they want to. Sometimes it's for the wrong reasons and leads to embarrassment and worse. Find out what happens when ordinary people become online laughingstocks. Plus, it's Food Friday. It's a great time to make some pie. We'll get some recipes and some of the basic tricks to making a great pie. That's tomorrow here on Central Time. We just heard a concern about seeing a shark in Door County. It wasn't a shark, it turned out. Shark attacks get a lot of attention, but really they're pretty rare around the world. In some places, they're even more rare. The governor of Colorado this week shared a map that's been going around showing shark attacks by state and joked and bragged that Colorado was tied for the fewest shark attacks of any state at zero. The map's a little vague. There's no label to say who it came from or what the time period was, but hey, good news, it shows Wisconsin also tied for fewest shark attacks at zero. So far, so good. But here's what caught my eye. The map shows Illinois with one shark attack, which is about one more than I expected. I looked it up online. According to our colleagues at WBEZ Public Radio in Chicago, there was a legendary shark attack off the shores of Lake Michigan. It's listed in an archive of shark attacks, but it may only be a legend. The story, a man was supposedly bitten on the leg by a bull shark in Lake Michigan off of Chicago in 1955. Again, non-fatally, so that's good news. The investigation by WBEZ couldn't come up with any witnesses or firsthand accounts. Could a bull shark make it to Lake Michigan? Maybe, with an emphasis on the maybe, they can survive for quite a while in fresh water. They've been spotted close to St. Louis on the Mississippi, but it is a long trip. But the lesson, if you're worried about shark attacks, you may be statistically a tiny bit safer in Wisconsin than in Illinois. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.